this is the most important rat. It comes down to making out. Whenever possible, put on side one of...
Rock All Over You Podcast! Let's rock! Eric and Edwin. Edwin and Eric, they don't give a fuck. They just want you to rock. Yeah. Bam, 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 dilly dee. Bam, bam, bam!
Okay, Johnny's gonna get his end in. He's going off. Everybody wants some. Johnny wants some too. We don't fucking begrudge him.
Anyway, hey, I'm proud of you for that. That's good.
Yeah, there you go. But anyway, so there's just three of us. But, you know, this is like the average number now for an episode. So I think we can do it. I think, and we're going to do this. The rest of this episode is dedicated to Johnny and Johnny getting his end in. So there you go.
Yeah, Johnny's getting laid right now. Right now as we speak.
Awesome. Our podcast made it happen. That's if you listen to us enough, you can get laid too. It's a podcast.
Yes.
Yes. So there you go. Learn from Johnny. And he's no fool. You like that segue?
I love it.
Here we go. Okay. So Ryan T. Russell, who is a happily married man, so that means he's not getting laid, but he's cool because he's hanging with us and talking Van Halen. So, what do you think of Fools?
All right, you've heard me earlier say about, like, the kind of songs that I didn't get when I was a kid that, like, have gotten better with age, and I've kind of understood more as I've gotten older and my musical kind of palette has expanded. This is a perfect example. Like, bought this album a little bit after 1984 Explosion. I would guess that, and I don't know this for certain, but I would guess I got it around 85. And this was like a song that I listened to, and it just was not a traditional rock song. It wasn't like a catchy, like, you got, like, most of Van Halen, especially starting with Van Halen 1, was pretty accessible. I mean, as much as it was groundbreaking at the time, there's a lot of really catchy, you know, verse, chorus, verse kind of music, whereas, like, something like this, it's just, again, it's for its time, it's kind of avant-garde. It's all over the place. It's weird. I mean, like, this is not your traditional song, but then as, you know, you get older, you kind of listen to different stuff. Like, I hear that beginning, and it totally... You know, I know now, after years of listening to Van Halen and interviews and all that, that, like, ZZ Top was a big thing with them. And I also know now that this song, the origins of this song go all the way back to, like, literally the mid-70s. I think, like, either 74 or 75, before Michael Anthony was even in the band. That was the origin of the song. And the lyrics changed a little bit. There's some really old demos. There's a live version of this from, like, I think, like, a high school show they played or something in 75, where it's more or less this song, but the lyrics are a little different, and it's obviously refined a little bit. But, like, again, the tradition of Van Halen, they did that all along. They pulled stuff from way back in the day, kind of sharpened it up, fine-tuned it, changed the lyrics here and there, and made a great, you know, recorded, proper, Ted Templeman-produced song. And again, I mean, I go into all the way up to the different kind of truth stuff that until the band does an official version, produce everything, it's just a demo. And that demo can rear its head anywhere along a band's path, and just never understood why people would think it's a negative to pull an old song and kind of sharpen the edges and make it a little better or whatever. As long as it's a great song, it's a great song. And Fools is a great song. It deserved to see the light of day somewhere in their catalog. I'm happy that they decided to put it on this album. And it actually, in the context of their entire catalog, it's kind of a perfect setting for it. It's this weird... This is their weirdest and most... I've always been kind of, like, surprised that this album sold more than Fair Warning, because Fair Warning to me is a lot more accessible just to your average rock fan.
Oh, interesting.
than this album.
I think Fair Warning's darker. But,
I think so, yeah.
But I agree with you, Ryan, that this album's a little weird. Yeah.
All these songs are just like fools, and I mean, we got more coming.
Even
up.
A single. I mean, even if we just look at like the two most famous songs from both albums, respectively, "Unchained" and you know, "Is This Love" are definitely more accessible and a little less weird as the two singles from this album. Or I say singles,
and,
but
and
you
"Hear
know.
About It Later" is one of their more melodic, kind of catchy songs, and yeah. Like, dark as Fair Warning was, it still had a lot of kind of like happy, like riffy, very accessible songs, where this album, it really doesn't. I mean, other than Everybody Wants Some, is there really like a hooky, catchy, pop-friendly song on this album?
I mean, and the Cradle of Rock was
the first two
big.
Songs.
Yeah.
I'd say the first two songs.
I don't know, man. I think I still say Fair Warning is very... it's very dark and very, I think it's like kind of looking back at it with, it's like looking back at, Monday Morning Quarterback kind of thing. You know, I think maybe now we can see a lot about Fair Warning that's maybe more accessible than this album, but back in the day, man, I think this album definitely is more accessible than like a Fair Warning, because Fair Warning is just so dark for back when it was released.
But we could agree both these albums were more experimental than the first two. But and they didn't have like a few like obvious poppy hits. But,
yeah, like yeah. Sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, but like I always love to like put my like this just kind of scenario of like a record company exec being handed either this or Fair Warning. Again, I think that these albums is kind of almost the same as like Rubber Soul, Revolver, or, you know, kind of sister albums where they're like back to back and they kind of have a similar vibe. I think they're both dark. I think they're both weird. And I love that they're both seem to have been recorded with not even a thought of like, let's make something that will be a hit. It was just like, just this weird all over the place kind of stuff, some old stuff they pulled out from the 70s, mid-70s, mm-hmm. but new stuff and everything. I just absolutely, it's what made these albums so special.
If I could digress a little bit, I think also sometimes it's also just about the timing, especially then. Like, this is the thing about Fair Warning was, like this album's coming off of two very dynamic albums that got a lot of attention. And Van Halen 2 had Dance the Night Away, which was a very poppy song that was played on the radio. So this had a little bit of a boost because of that. And if anything, it probably the fact that this album was weirder and didn't have as many hits as the first two probably is why Fair Warning probably took a little bit of a hit, you know? It took a little bit of a hit because of this album. And also, like, 81, there's already, like, the new wave of British heavy metal, and Judas Priest blew up, and there was a lot more competition. Mm-hmm. And I feel, obviously, Van Halen was still a huge live act, but in terms of the period and the timing, Fair Warning was just kind of hitting the marketplace at a time where they no longer had like the new band glow, but yet didn't really morph into the popular band that they would be that would cross over.
That's
so
a good
they
point.
Were, yeah. So I feel like it's just kind of like from a marketplace standpoint, a little bit of growing pains for them.
Yeah.
You know, actually, it's a good point. I never really thought of that, but I think the lack of commercial appeal of this album probably affected
whereas if Fair Warning, if you just flipped it, it would have been the other way around, you know. If Fair Warning was the album that came after
Van Halen, while you were talking about that, is this was the first album that did not have any covers on it.
That's right.
I always mention to all these haters of the Dave era who say covers, if you take Diver Down out of the seven albums they did with Dave out of the mix, they literally had three covers on six albums.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, like, the whole covers thing, it was basically Diver Down, and then...
Yeah, and which would you prefer? Would you prefer a lackluster, like, filler song on a Van Hagar album, or a really stellar cover from the Dave Roth era? Well,
and the thing, too, was Van Halen covers. I mean, come on, listen to those Van Halen covers and tell me they sound exactly alike the
cover.
They have their own style to it, you know? So it's like they really made those songs their songs, you know?
There was a band, actually two bands, that are very well known called The Beatles and Rolling Stones. Their earliest albums are half the songs are covers.
Exactly. I mean, especially The Beatles, man. I mean, you know, why are you gonna argue with Van Halen when Beatles and the Stones, even though I'm not a big Stones fan, they're legendary. Beatles and the Stones did the same fucking thing. Probably had more covers.
More so. Both bands.
And that's how it was done back in the day.
Yeah,
you know?
The Beatles and Stones, their first like three or four albums are almost all half covers.
Yes.
Yeah. So. So, and
fuck those Van Hagar fans. God damn it. Fuck you, Mark Gallantara. I love you, but also at the same time, like, god damn it.
But there's not too many of them, though. All right. So, anyway, speaking of which, in terms of people that would not like Van Halen because they did covers, Fools, Ryan. So, you got anything else to say about it before I throw it to Eric?
No, that's all I got to say about Fools. Very cool song that I came around to later in life. Just didn't get it when I was a younger kid, but... So what's so cool about like music over the years is like, you know, the stuff that sticks with you, the stuff that you listen to year after year after year, you go through kind of like little different periods with it, where like different songs your favorite song, and you almost like and this album was like very much like that for me, where first pass through, you know, I'm in the 84 era, just not like it didn't speak to me as much as that age when I'm 13, 14 years old. And then I picked it back up in my 20s. And I was like, all of a sudden these songs, Fools and a couple we're about to talk about coming up, didn't speak to me as much when I was a young kid, but like as an adult and over the years became some of my favorite Van Halen songs.
It's interesting. I think it's also about timeline. Cause I was like the same age, but it was like the early 90s for me. So it was just like I had, like I said, I was already like listening to like Metallica and stuff. So when I listened to this stuff, I had like a totally different, it was like the opposite. It was like because of songs like Fools that I got into it, you know?
Well, yeah, you already had the kind of a breadth of music that you would inhale over the course of 15 years or whatever. And when I was hearing this stuff, like my catalog wasn't that big. It was pretty limited.
Yeah, it makes sense. That's why timeline definitely matters to how certain songs hit you at certain periods. You know, it's not just your age, but the time period, the year you were when you're hearing it.
Yeah, and that's why anytime, and I say this over and over again when I'm on with you guys, when I'm on with Ralph and Ian, like, you know, timeline is such an important thing.
It is.
Anytime I'm having a conversation like with, you know, somebody who's obviously like a diehard music fan like I am, one of the first questions I ask every time, okay, like, what's your entry to this band? Like where did you fall in love with this band? Like, what era did you come in on? Because once you understand that, everything they're saying will make a lot more sense to you. Because as much as we might pretend we're gonna treat all this stuff equally as we consume it, there is a sentimentality, no doubt, with what entered you into that band. What was the first album that you fell in love with that band? So, I mean, that plays a huge role.
Yeah, agree. And Eric, what do you think of Fools?
Man, you know, for the longest time, this is actually my favorite track on the album. It is kind of a dark horse album. This is not like one of those Van Halen songs with Dave that you hear a lot about. It's very much a deep cut, but something about it, man, just really, it really clings to me. You know, especially in high school, I really loved it. And especially after high school, like I remember after high school, it's like that awkward transition period from like high school years to adult years. And, you know, all my friends like either moved away or went to college. I had one friend that went to the military. And so, like, it was kind of weird after high school. I didn't have, like, a lot of friends to hang out with. And so I hung out with my dad a lot. And I remember he got all the Van Halen albums again on CD and started going through a big Van Halen kick again. And sometimes he would, because I was struggling to find work, because back when the recession was still very much a thing. And I had a hard time finding a job. And even back in, 2012 when I graduated, I was trying to find, like, kind of a full-time job. There's still that stigma about a guy having long hair applying for a job. You know, that was still very much a thing back then. And it was even worse by the fact that it was just hard to find a job in general. And so my dad would help me out by have me come with him to work at Allpaws, which was a pet crematory. And we just went to the animal hospitals and picked up, the animals to bring to the crematory. And he would sometimes get me like, hey, you're going to work with me today, make a couple bucks. And it was fun, too. It was just, even though it was kind of a shitty job, it was fun just kind of hanging out with my dad. And, we were just listening to music and talking about music. And this is a song I remember very much during that time was Fools. I loved it. It was so cool. It was a Van Halen song you didn't hear on the fucking radio. And I love the opening where it's like, Eddie and Dave kind of going back and forth, Eddie doing something on the guitar and Dave kind of just goes back with the vocals. And this is one of the songs too I point at where, people want to talk shit about Dave all the time being like, oh, Dave's a shitty vocalist and Sammy's a better vocalist technically. Man, listen to Fools, man. Listen to the back and forth between Dave and Eddie on this song at the very beginning. It's so good and just goes to show how what a unique and very good singer Dave is. It kind of reminds me of like Richie Blackmore and Ian Gillan when they do like Strange Kind of Woman live and they do kind of that back and forth. And or like even like Phil Anselmo and Dimebag Darrell on the end of Cemetery Gates. It's really good. It's a fun song. I love the lyrics. It's the lyrics, very much relating to being young and being like fuck authority. Fuck the teachers at school and, these adult figures trying to tell me what to do. I'm just going to live my life. And I dig it, man. It's a cool fucking song. Really great.
Yeah. Fucking Fools. It's awesome. I think, this was a song I remember, like, because I was already familiar with the other two songs from the radio. When I first heard this album, Fools was, like, the first deep track. And, it hits you instantly with that really cool guitar intro that Eddie's doing. And, I was, all in right away. This probably these days, not one of my favorite songs from the album. I do love it. It's kind of a mid-tier song now. But it was, Eric, likewise, it was one of my favorite songs when I first heard this album.
Yeah.
I was very into, I was very into bluesy stuff too, I was into,
it's very kind of bluesy almost.
Yeah, and I was getting, I was into the Doors and AC/DC and Aerosmith and shit like that. So I was into things that were kind of bluesy as well. And this is both heavy and bluesy. It's heavy blues and kind of ZZ Top, AC/DC. It has that kind of vibe.
ZZ Top.
Yeah.
Yes.
There's a song on the second side that's even more so. But yeah, this is very ZZ Top. And, Dave's lyrics. And yeah, then, you also, you're an angry young adolescent person. You think.
Oh, yeah. I mean, still, even at 30 years old, man, I'm still kind of I watch a lot of John Carpenter movies too, so I'm kind of very much fuck the government, fuck the man, kind of rebellious,
At 45, I'm still the same way. I still think everyone's fools.
Man. Who makes the rules, man? It's fools.
I mean, look at these fucking idiots running things. So, so I feel that way. This is the epic on the album, by the way. It's the longest song on the album.
It is.
A lot of that's because of the slow burn beginning with the guitar. But it's 5 minutes and 55 seconds. But it's great. I love it. This is the irony. I have a feeling that we're not going to talk as much about Romeo Delight as the other songs. Maybe you might, Eric. The thing is, me, Ryan, and Johnny Vogan, who was... once our guest on this episode, that was Elijah. We got a little seat for him. Anyway, the Stephen Merchant will get that. Anyway, so We made this. I don't know if you remember, Eric. Did you listen to the Scab episode of the Rock and Metal Combat podcast where it was me, Ryan, Johnny, and Ian, and we did our top... Was it top 25, Ryan?
Yeah, 25, yeah.
Well, I remember that. That was a good episode, yeah.
We proved with science that Romeo Delight was the greatest Van Halen song. It was kind of like what we did with Rocket Ride.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great fucking song, man. You can't go wrong with it. You want me to take this one? Or?
No, well, let me give it some setup. Okay. I'm going to give it to you after me and Ryan talk about it. But the thing is, this is personally my third favorite Van Halen song.
Fuck yeah.
And it's my favorite song on the album, like Johnny. So Johnny said it was his favorite. It's my third favorite. I forget where Ryan has it, but obviously he had it in his top five. It was very high. And we all had it very high, Ian Wadley included. That's why it was number one. It was number one using Ryan's mathematics, his rock and roll mathematics, that made Romeo Delight number one. It's my favorite song in the album. And it's one of those things that even though Hear About It Later and Unchained are my top two favorite Van Halen songs, I was very happy. I was not dissatisfied to see that Romeo Delight that we chose as the number one choice. To me, it was like, objectively, I don't know, I'd say it's this or Unchained. Like, if I was to give a alien that came to Earth to hear a Van Halen song, it'd be either Unchained or Romeo Delight. I feel like I'd give them one of... Either of those two songs would do the trick. Like, and if the alien wasn't into it, fucking squash that fucking alien.
Yeah, fuck that alien. Because
he ain't right, you know? He ain't going to roll with you. Anyway, but Romeo Delight, it's great. I'm going to throw this out there as a question that I want both of you respectfully to answer when it's your turn. Because this is one of the songs that, I don't know, regardless of what that engineer says, I find it very hard that Michael Anthony is playing bass on this song. Maybe he is. And if he is, I apologize, Mr. Sir Michael Anthony, because even though I still don't think you deserve a co-songwriting credit, you are a fucking amazing bassist. If you are indeed playing bass on this, I don't know. I feel like it's a little like, you know, Jimi Hendrix and Keith Richards playing bass lines for their basses. I don't know. There's a dexterity. There's a purpose to this bass line, especially in that whole breakdown section where it's the heartbeat that, I don't know. I feel like Eddie would just cut the middleman here. Like, I don't feel like he's going to, like, be busting his ass to make Michael Anthony play the bass just perfect at that part. I feel like he'd be like, fuck it, dude. Just go eat some Doritos. I'll do it.
Michael Anthony and the fucking Doritos, man.
But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm not giving Michael Anthony enough credit. I'm curious what you guys think. But this is one of the suspicious songs, bass-wise. Because that bass is so fucking amazing. Almost makes you feel like your last name has to be Van Halen to be playing.
For real, man. For real.
But anyway, I love breakdowns in general. My favorite AC/DC song and one of my favorite songs of all time is Sin City.
And that's a great song.
Yeah, no shit. And Eddie Van Halen, his favorite AC/DC album was Powerage. He was a big Powerage fan. So, and this is 2 years after Powerage, so there's that influence. And so I'm sure he was thinking of that breakdown where it gets so gentle after being so heavy. And some of Dave's best lyrics. He's bringing fucking whiskey to the party tonight, looking for, you know, somebody to squeeze. I assume it's consensual. Let's hope so. Regardless, it's a fucking rock and roll party. And even the title, Romeo Delight, it's a fucking perfect song. It's one of the greatest fucking hard rock songs. Straddling that line, straddling like a great fuck, you know? Fucking rock and roll, hard rock, heavy metal, all in one fucking sexy package. It's fucking Romeo Delight. It's a fucking masterpiece. What do you think, Ryan T. Russell? What do you think of Romeo Delight?
Yeah, I tell you what, Ed, when I could hear you wax poetic on Van Halen for hours. It's beautiful.
Thank you, sir.
I agree with every word. You know, I'll pull an Edwin here and say, like, if you want to hear my full take on Romeo Delight, go listen to the rock and the scab episode of Top 25 Van Halen songs when Ralph was on hiatus and came back. But yeah, I mean, it is truly one of their best songs of all time, and every part of it. I mean, again, disjointed, weird, Eddie and Dave just playing off of each other. It's so cool. And, you know, his, you know, this is very Steven Tyler, and there's no doubt. I mean, people that don't know this, I mean, there is a little age gap between Aerosmith and Van Halen, where, you know, Aerosmith's early 70s, Van Halen's late 70s. I think people underestimate how big an influence Steven Tyler was on David Lee Roth. And that's he's true. Talked about it before. If you hear interviews where he talks about Steven Tyler, he was big fan of him. And I think they're very similar in the way that they're like these like really intelligent guys. And like their lyrics are just very different. Whether you like their lyrics or not is a completely separate story.
They're agree with you, yeah.
Yeah, I can totally hear. They both got that kind of jivey street.
It's yeah, like Ian Rob of consciousness. Well, it's you know, like street poetry. It's,
yeah. Well, I'll tell you this, man. When I was in a band in high school, the hardest cover songs to do were like Van Halen songs and Aerosmith songs. So those lyrics were just like, the lyrics were so well written and so just like, they weren't very simple. They're very complex those were very hard lyrics for me as a singer to fucking learn.
Yeah, the cadence of them, they pack a lot of words into a small little package.
And not
the way your average singer or lyricist would think of it. And it's what makes them so. Dylan was similar. Dylan was telling a story, and he would pack 100 syllables into one line if it helped tell the story.
Yeah, I think that's one thing. David Lee Roth and Steven Tyler both. Steven Tyler's maybe a little bit older, but they're kind of a similar generation. Where Steven Tyler and David Lee Roth both had a sonically kind of a soul influence, I would say, with how they sang. And black artists, blues and souls singers. But lyrically, they liked the British Invasion, they liked Bob Dylan, they liked John Lennon. So you had like the combination of the two, like phrasing things like soul singers, but cramming in all the stream of consciousness lyrics of like a Dylan. And that's something you got from them, which also kind of foreshadows rap in a lot of ways.
And Run DMC verified it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They totally did.
In a lot of ways, the way that Dave sang, the way that Steven sang was a precursor to rap. It really was. And this song is a perfect example. I mean, you listen to that whole first verse, how many words he packs in, and it's all mumbo jumbo. I don't think it really means anything. It's just kind of creating an environment. But like, I've told her, never in hell, no special reason, must have lied because I ain't leaving. We're in for a very long night. Heard a vicious rumor with a mama's tongue. You desperate woman need a man with a gun. High crime's on in the city of light. Like, I don't
so
know
cool.
what it means, but like the atmosphere it creates, the attitude, the swagger. Like, I mean, like those lyrics is almost like poetry.
It is. It's like the Ryan James Dio rule that I coined in one of the episodes. It's like, just because he can say stuff and it doesn't make any fucking sense, but just the way he puts it together, it sounds so fucking cool that you're not going to even question it, you know?
Well, that's what poetry is. It's about using words to create an atmosphere. And Dave is creating, like, the bravado of the evening. That's, like, what he's creating. Like, you know, the swagger of going out and fucking, you're just going to own the fucking town. You're going to own the room. You're going to own that woman. You're going to own that bottle. You're owning everything. And he's using words to give you that feeling, the same way the music's giving you that feeling. He's just doing it with words.
Yeah, absolutely. And the last thing I'll say on this song, just to tie it up for me, and if you guys got anything left, absolutely. But you can't talk about Romeo Delight without talking about this. To me, was the most infamous song for Dave, where he did the whole shtick, and a lot of people don't even know it was your shtick.
I know what you're talking about.
I forgot the fucking words.
Yeah. Like Hell yeah, man.
That was a stage routine. He had planned that before he did it. And idiots, especially Sammy fans, misinterpreted to think that he actually forgot the words. No,
oh,
dude,
yeah.
It's a fucking shtick. It's part of Dave's shtick.
Yeah. Well, another influence was Jim Morrison. And Jim Morrison used to, he used to actually stage some of his falling down on stage and passing it out.
Oh, like, yeah.
There was actually a knowing shtick with some of the stuff he did. And Dave was doing the same thing.
He got a big response, too. I mean, all you Sammy Hagar fans can talk their shit about that, but at the end of the day, man, when Dave says, "I forgot the fucking words," when he says that, whether he actually forgot the words or a shtick, whatever you want to fucking believe, it was a shtick, but, what are these Sammy fans all believe? That got a bigger fucking reaction than Sammy Hagar doing a full fucking set. Absolutely. Dave forgetting the fucking words and saying that to the crowd got a bigger fucking pop, that's a wrestling term, a bigger pop than fucking anything Sammy ever did in his fucking career. So,
And again, you have to take into account the time. This is pre-YouTube, pre-internet, pre-anybody being able to see what happened in the show before.
Nobody knew.
Show. People seeing the Van Halen show in 1980, 81, 82, that was the first time they were ever seeing that music presented live. So whether he did that night after night after night didn't mean anything to that audience.
Yeah.
It was genuine, and made them feel like, holy shit, this is real. Like, and he knew that.
Made it seem raw and authentic. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Eric, what do you think of Romeo's Delight?
Oh, my God. I fucking love Romeo's Delight, man. This for a while was my favorite Van Halen song for a fucking long time. And I love that clip of, I know the famous one was the Us Festival.
Yeah.
Where he says that line, I forgot the fucking words, and the crowd loses their shit.
Crazy.
And I fucking loved it, man. I'm like, fuck yeah, at the time, I didn't know, so I thought he actually did forget the words, but I'm like, man, what a way to recover from it. And the crowd loses their shit. It's like Ralph Vieira said with, the swearing thing, when Dave would sing, what was that song? Sing or Swing. When he saw him sing it, on the Fair Warning Tour.
So fucking good.
Oh, yeah. People lost their shit because, you didn't say the F word or swear on fucking stage that often. So it was a big deal. And I always thought that was fucking cool. I love this goddamn song. It's so cool. It's so sexy. Edwin, to answer your question about Michael Anthony, this is one of those ones where I wonder, I feel like Eddie Van Halen played bass on this because the bass playing is just too fucking good for it.
What do you think, Ryan? You didn't weigh in on that.
Oh, yeah, I got to hear what Ryan thinks. Do you think Michael played bass?
I'm telling you, that Don Landy interview kind of like shook my world with that whole thing.
I mean, he might have forgot about one or two songs.
Yeah. it's Long Live Rock and Roll. Richie Blackmore played bass on half of it.
There's another song coming up later in this album where I question the bass playing more than this one.
But there's another one, too. Yeah, it's probably the same song. But, I'm thinking as well. But I don't know.
But
I mean,
interesting note. I pulled this up because we were talking about how this became number one. I did a thing, because this is during the pandemic, you got to remember. I had all the time in the fucking world. And I did this thing after we did the episode, me, Johnny, Edwin, and Ian, the top 25 episode. I threw it out to the whole Facebook page and all the other people. I had 12, 13 other people put in a list so we could redo the top 25, and Romeo Delight still came in second.
Second? Wow. What was number one?
Unchained.
Unchained is my favorite Van Halen song as of right now.
So that was for a long time my favorite. Five.
It's
once I threw it out to the rest of the.
Yeah. Well, then I'm not wrong with saying that if there were two songs I would give to Aliens, it'd be Unchained or Romeo. We sometimes say Romeo's Delight. It's technically Romeo Delight. Yeah. So there you go. But do you have anything else to say, Eric, about Romeo Delight before we move on?
Oh, I mean, it's a great fucking Van Halen song. I mean, this song is just everything that's great about Van Halen. It's another song, too, that brings back memories of, like, 2012, you know, after graduation, hanging out with my dad, you know, working with him, and, you know, us just listening to Van Halen, just us obsessing over how fucking great this music was. We also played I remember my dad bought the Van Halen Guitar Hero game. We'd sometimes play it together. So it was just fun, man. It reminds me a lot of my hanging with my dad, Mr. Ronald Joseph, on the Facebook page if you're on it. Join the Facebook page. But it's a great fucking song. And there's also a great cover of it by the band Annihilator. They do a really fucking great cover of this song. So check that out, too, if you get the chance. But I love it, man. Romeo Delight. It's just everything you can love about fucking Van Halen in one song.
Nice. Hey, Eric, really quick, I love that you have a bonding experience with a family member because I have the same thing with my kid. My son, Dallas, is now 26 years old.
He looks so much fucking like you. I saw a picture on Facebook of your kids, and I'm like, God damn, he looks just like Ryan.
He's my mini-me. But anyway, like that, when he was into like a handful of my favorite bands, but he was really into GNR and Van Halen in particular, and right around the time when he was totally into the whole Guitar Hero and what was the other one that was
Rock Band,
he got the Van Halen one, and like I loved the Van Halen one because it wasn't just your generic Van Halen shit. There was some deep tracks on there, and I was
like, all Dave. That's what I loved about too, all Dave.
Yeah, and like not too long after that, I ended up taking my son, when at the time he was probably, 12, 13 years old, to the Different Kind of Truth tour.
Nice.
So Van Halen was something I've been able to share with my kid, which, Van Halen on its own was unbelievable, but actually to be able to have a kid who's into them and go to a concert makes it that much cooler.
Damn right.
Nice.
All right, I'm going to take a bathroom break while you do the next song, Edwin.
I'm going to flip this record over to Tor. You know, another thing I love about David Lee Roth, it's because he's a highly intelligent man. He uses proper pronunciation in his titles. And, one thing that bothers me about parentheses in a lot of songs is it doesn't bother me so much if they're used correctly, but more often than not, they're used because, like, it's like they want the singer or the whoever's in charge of the band wants to have a certain song title, but it's not the chorus, and they make the chorus in parentheses, but yet because they want like the record label or someone wants you to know what the song is, like that's what you think the song is, or even worse. Sometimes it's a sentence. Like, for example, Aerosmith, Dude Looks Like a Lady, not written by Steven Tyler. Anyway, Desmond fucking Child. Anyway, not as great as the stuff Steven Tyler wrote without Desmond Child in the fucking 70s. Just saying.
Hey, I love Desmond Child, just for the record. I love some of that fucking shit.
Desmond Child.
I love Desmond Child. He wrote some good songs, man. I can't deny it.
It's not hard to fucking write his fucking disco fucking.
Yeah, he wrote the best. He co-wrote like one of the best Kiss songs, the best Kiss song ever in my world.
What is that?
Only.
it's a good song. No, definitely not one of the best.
My favorite Kiss song.
Paul Stanley wrote fucking Black Diamond. He wrote Black Diamond for one fucking person himself. Steven Tyler wrote fucking Dream On and shit like that by himself. These motherfuckers didn't need help. It was lame. Anyway.
What song did he say?
Who Wants to Be Lonely? That's my favorite Kiss song of all time.
I like that song.
Yeah, it's a good song, but you know,
it's a great fucking song. It's genius.
Listen, I am sure that 70s Paul Stanley could have wrote a song like that by himself. You know,
he wrote with Desmond Child and Jean Bouvet from the Plastic X.
I like Asylum and Animalize, Ericus.
I like
great,
it, but they
great get, albums.
Bring in the other songwriters. It's lame. These guys didn't need it.
The extra songwriters usually kill a band, but it did all right for a couple albums for Kiss.
Yeah. What was I saying before I went into that tangent?
You're kind of talking about co-writers, it sounded like, when I came back.
No, but there was something before that. Ryan, what was I talking about right before that?
I'm stoned and drunk. I have no idea.
It's that kind of episode. All right. I don't know why I went on that tangent.
Well, we were in the middle of the album. I know that.
We were out of
Romeo to Life.
Oh, I remember. You see, I'm not that bad, even though I'm drunker than Ryan. But I'm not stoned. So there you go. It's about Dude Looks Like a Lady. Okay, fucking Dude Looks Like a Lady. All right. The song title is Dude, and then Looks Like a Lady's in parentheses. That annoys the shit out of me. Because obviously...
love dot dot dots, but you hate parentheses.
Well, no, because it's grammatically incorrect. It should just be Dude, comma, Looks Like a Lady. That's how he's singing it. It's not fucking Dude in parentheses Looks Like a Lady. It's the fucking... or just write it as a statement. Fucking Dude Looks Like a Lady. One fucking clean sentence. That parentheses is fucking bullshit. Most of the time, 100%. Parentheses are bullshit.
But, 100%, but Permanent Vacation is...
it's a good album.
Underrated by people.
It's a good album. The best songs are the ones where they don't have co-songwriters. But it's a good album. But... David Lee Roth is a highly intelligent man. He uses punctuation correctly. He doesn't give you a bunch of bullshit parentheses. He uses ellipses when necessary. Even when he uses exclamation points, they are correct. Like Tora. That is a correct use of exclamation points. He has a question mark. You know, you ever see songs that are questions that don't have question marks that in the title? That annoys.
Yeah, that kind of is annoying.
That's annoying. David Lee Roth doesn't do that. He will put a question mark there. The man is smart. He knows where to put his fucking punctuation. Just gotta say, maybe it's the writer in me, but I respect it. Anyway, so Tora Tora. It's two of them. I'm thinking of the movie. Anyway, Tora Tora. Johnny Vogan brought this up, and I think we're all thinking the same thing. I mean, everyone thinks the same thing. When you hear Tora Tora, the first thing that comes to your mind is, this is not a fucking song on its own, it's an intro.
Yeah.
So, but we're gonna treat this as a song, alright? We're gonna humor it, with Tora Tora as a song. Even though, obviously, it's just an intro to Loss of Control, and they're one's fucking song. Look, it's still short. Even if you put these two things together, it's still under four minutes. I don't know why. I can say this. They were on the same label as Black Sabbath. They were Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
Warner Brothers had a lot of great fucking bands in the 70s. They had Black Sabbath, they had Fleetwood Mac, and they had Van Halen.
Three great fucking bands I love to death.
Yeah. And... like AC/DC, Eddie Van Halen was a big Sabbath fan. He excited Tony Iommi, of course. Who wouldn't be a big Tony Iommi fan? And obviously, Tora Tora itself sounds very Sabbathy. It sounds the most like a Black Sabbath song more than anything I've ever heard from from Van Halen. It's very doomy. And that riff sounds like a Tony Iommi riff. So because of that, I don't think it's a coincidence that it's doing the Sabbath thing, the very typical Sabbath thing of making an intro its own song title. So I don't know if this comes from Warner Brothers themselves or perhaps by Eddie as an homage, but it might be an homage to Black Sabbath saying, we are taking this song that's obviously an intro, but that sounds Sabbathy, and we're going to make it its own song and call it Tor Tor. It's cool. It's doomy. It's weird. It's only going to get weirder when it actually gets into the actual song. Yeah. But we'll hold off on that. Before we get into Lost of Control, Ryan, what do you think of Tor Tor?
Can I hand this off? Because I can't do these songs separated.
Alright, Eric, do you have anything to say if this is an intro before we get into the next song?
Dude, I fucking love Tor Tor, and yeah, it's a little intro for Lost Control, but man, I fucking love the song. There is a music video for both Tor Tor and Lost Control. I guess we'll kind of elaborate on that when we get to Lost Control, because it's only fair. But I love it, man. It's so doomy, and yes, it does sound like Sabbath. And I know Eddie was a very big fan of Sabbath and Tony Iommi, and they ended up becoming very close friends. It's so fucking cool. I love how dark and evil it sounds, you know. I remember just being intrigued by it when I saw the album for the first time, the CD in my mom's collection. I remember wanting to hear Tora Tora. Because for me, Tora Tora, I always associated it with, World War II, and, you know, they always had all these videos on TV for, World War II footage of Iwo Jima and World War II and all that stuff. And you'd always heard that term, Tora Tora. So for me, it was just a very cool word, and I associate it with, World War II stuff. So I was dying to hear this song. It never disappointed me. It's cool, man. I love it. I love how doomy it is. And I will say, although it is it leads into Lost Control, there was one time when I was working at a chemical plant in 2019 or 2018, and I was running this chemical plant where I worked from 6 to 6 to 6. Like, I worked these crazy hours, and I was there very early one day, and I was just listening to some Van Halen before I had to walk over to work. I had to walk through the turnstiles and all this and that. And so I'm listening to Van Halen. I had on shuffle and played Tora Tora, but instead of playing Lost Control, because it's on shuffle, it played Romeo Delight. And that sounds really cool. Like, if you ever get a chance, listen to Tora Tora and then play Romeo Delight right after. Those two bleed in together very perfectly. Like, that could have been an intro to Romeo Delight as well. But it's just a cool fucking little intro, man. And man, it would have been cool here, if they could have expanded upon it, made, a full-length song. But it works perfect for what it is as an intro to Lost Control. So I guess we can go into Lost Control, and, I mean, Ryan or Edwin, you take it, man.
And let's give it to Ryan, because Ryan wants to talk about songs.
All right, I'm going to take the whole package.
Whole package.
Yeah, hell yeah.
I've talked about this before, and for the... You know, I'm always fascinated by, over the generations, the different mediums, the different ways that we listen to music. And there's positives and negatives to all of them, but the one biggest positive of digital music to me, and it was this thing it took me a while of Googling to even realize existed, is iTunes, which is the predominant way I've listened to music over the last 20 years, has this way of tethering, what they call tethering songs together, where you can put a song in your, music library where you will always hear those two songs back to back. And throughout my history of listening to music, there's probably 40, 50 songs of all the bands I listen to that are like that, where there's a song that should absolutely be tied together. And I mean, you get to the ultimate example of the Beatles, Abbey Road side two, where it's 15 minutes something. But there's a lot of little intros into songs where that just always should be listened to like that. Like we talked about it in the Dokken episode, Tooth and Nail and Without Warning. I mean,
Without Warning.
They always have to be played together. I mean, and this
exactly.
is an example. Like, Tora Tora and Lost Control always should be able to listen to back to back. And again, this is this reoccurring theme, and this album is fucking weird. Lost Control is what do you even call this song? I mean, it is gonzo. It is weird. I mean, this is bordering into, weird, Zappa weird. Like, at that time, 1980, this song, and I talked about this a lot in the top 25, but I love hearing like other bands' takes on Van Halen shit. Literally one of my favorite covers ever done. It was during the pandemic. Faith No More fans might know Mr. Bungle. Mr. Bungle that now has like Scotty in it. I mean, it's like a super group kind of now. Lombardo from Slayer. I mean, it's amazing. But they did this thing during the pandemic where it was right after Eddie died, and they did a cover of Lost Control. And if you're a Van Halen fan and you haven't heard this yet, right now, pause on this and go YouTube. I think it's like The Night They Came Home or something was the name of the video for the... It was like a home video that ended up coming out. Them playing live in this like home studio during the pandemic. But holy shit, Mr. Bungle does like the most unfucking believable cover of Lost Control ever. So fucking cool. This song is so unique, so metal, so heavy, so weird. Again, like people that say like, oh, they were constricted with Dave, they could only stick to party rock and everything. Have they ever heard songs like this?
They're so fucking ignorant.
You haven't seriously sat down and listened to the Roth catalog, where you can literally say they were like constrained. Like they were the most diverse. But just listen to this album. It's like it is all over the fucking place with the moods and the weirdness and the heaviness and the God damn. And again, go back to Little Kid Ryan. I didn't get this song at all in 1985. Was like my least favorite song in the album. Like one of my favorite songs on the album. This song fucking rules. So weird, so experimental, but it hits on every fucking level. Mayday, Mayday, all the. It's fucking brilliant.
Hell yeah, man!
Right on. Do you know who's doing the high voice, the falsetto in the background? Do you know that?
It's probably Michael Anthony, man. His high falsetto voice is like signature.
Yeah, you go ahead there.
I fucking love this song, man. It's a great song. It's very punky. Very much like kind of Van Halen tapping into the whole punk rock thing. Because it's just very fast. It's very chaotic and out of control. And it's a very short song. And I love it, man. I've always loved this fucking song, and I still love it to this day. It's just so cool and chaotic, and I love it. And I love what Ryan said, too, about, like, you know, I hate how Sammy fans talk about how, oh, Dave, it's just the party rock bullshit. And it's like, man, no, Dave was very diverse, man. They did a bunch of different shit. I think Sammy fans just they don't listen to the full catalog and really fully understand how diverse they were with Dave. And, you know, there's a really cool video of this song. It's like Lost Control and this song together. And it's a really fucking cool video. It's really cool, like, early 80s video. It's not a traditional MTV-style video. You know, I love it with the nurses and this and that. It's just a cool fucking song. And I remember, too, when I went to the Philippines for the first time, I had, like, a picture of me, and I'm wearing the Van Halen shirt, the same Van Halen shirt I'm wearing now, the Women and Children First shirt. And it was a picture taken of me by my friend that drove me to the airport, just waiting to, you know, pass my gate and get my boarding pass. And I had to play, you know, when I decided to pick what song I wanted for that picture on Instagram, I was like, I got to pick Lost Control because it's an airplane song, because, like, you know, he's on there saying, Mayday, Mayday, you know, like through a, you know, radio. So I was like, I had to pick that song. It's a great song. I love it. Love the chaos. Love the chaoticness. And Edwin, you know, you go ahead and take this song, but also talk about, too, what you think about the video. Because I think it's a fun fucking video.
I didn't actually see the video, so send me a link.
What? You never saw it?
No! Is this like one of those videos that came out later? Because I don't recall ever seeing
this. Well, I think it was much like the So This Is Love video, where I think it didn't surface till like later on in the internet age. But I think it was like It had to be like 2015, 16, somewhere around that era, but I'm shocked you haven't seen it. It's really fucking cool.
No, I did see that late, the one you were talking about. But yeah, I saw this. So This Is Love with the Dinosaur. I've seen that. But yeah, I didn't see this one. So yeah, send me a link. I'll watch it. I will watch after this.
Hell yeah, man. It's cool.
I'm sure it involves nurses. So yeah, I'm sure.
Oh yeah, there's nurses, man. You know, you and me, we love nurses.
Back up. Okay, Loss of Control. It's a song so fucking crazy, it destroyed this podcast for 10 minutes.
Well, where did you...
I haven't even fucking talked about Loss of Control yet. That's how crazy it is. But listen, you guys covered it. It's crazy. It's gonzo. It's a little fucking masterpiece. One thing you guys didn't bring up is I also think in the beginning that guitar line, it sounds kind of proto-thrashy. That's kind of like a thrashy guitar line. It's a very heavy song too. It's not just that it's chaotic. You
know, it's more than anything. If I could lay that like one little.
Yeah. And this is before Kill 'Em All.
It's almost like the bass line of Pantera.
Yeah, it is. You know, it's like thrash and groove. And I have a fond memory with the song actually.
Go for it. Tell it.
Where I was sitting it was one night at the Rainbow Bar and Grill with my ex-wife, who was my wife at the time. And we're sitting there, and they play some cool deep tracks, as you would hope at the Rainbow, and this was one of them. They start playing Loss of Control. The only time in my life I ever heard this place, like, outside of the context of listening to this album, you know?
Yeah.
Like, in a public place. It's not one of the songs you expect to hear. But, to the Rainbow Bar and Grill's credit, it was part of the mix. It was started playing. I forget if Tora Tora was... Also, you know, they played it together. They probably did, but I don't remember. I just remember Loss of Control came on. And my ex-wife, who kind of, you know, she's a rock fan. She's more of an alternative rock fan. But she wasn't, like, into some of the heavier stuff that I was into. You know, she could roll some Metallica and some stuff like that. But she wasn't as into the ultra metal stuff as I was. So this is interesting. When Loss of Control came on... She didn't immediately recognize it as a Van Halen song. She looked at me and she went, and I remember this. This stuck out in my memory. She looks at me and goes, they're playing some really heavy stuff here tonight. And it's like, yeah, she was fucking right. Loss of Control is a fucking heavy song.
It is, man. Most
people, if they didn't know it was Van Halen, would just hear it and just think it was some crazy fucking Mr. Bungle shit. They wouldn't.
Yeah,
that's why punky. Mr. Bungle covered it, because it's like thrashy punk, Zappa all rolled into one. It's a really crazy song. The fact that it's so short, you know, and oh man, I just love it. I mean, this is the kind of shit. Like I said, when there were moments like this on A Different Kind of Truth where they had some crazy moments like this, I was like, oh wow, they're actually going there. Like this is like. This is real Van Halen. This is the kind of shit that fucking Dave should be proud of, you know? Where they were doing some crazy shit. Alex is doing some crazy drumming. Maybe Michael Anthony's playing the bass. I don't know. But anyway, it's great.
Doritos.
He's definitely doing probably the high voice in the background. I'll give him credit.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'll give him credit for that.
But it's an awesome song. One of my favorite songs on the album. And then I'm going to just go... right in to take your whiskey home.
Hell yeah. Well, you should take the song first.
And cut you off for 1 second. Just
what the fuck?
God damn it, Ryan.
Have either of you guys heard that Mr. Bungle cover?
I this is actually the first time I'm hearing about it. All right. I'll listen to Mr. Bungle a lot, even though my favorite Faith No More album is the first one with... Mike Patton, when he has that whiny voice.
Right, you motherfuckers with your fucking homework assignments you're giving me.
Do me a favor. When we
up, I want to do fucking homework.
Next week, just look up and play that cover.
I will do it.
I'll do it, yeah.
You guys...
I'll do it. We'll do it.
You guys will appreciate the fuck out of that. They play it, like, to the note. Perfect. And... Patton, whether you love him or hate him, sings it like literally does even like the through the he does a part of the megaphone the way Ross lyrics sound in like the where it almost sounds like he's talking through a walkie-talkie or whatever.
Yeah. Hey man, I'll admit, man, even though I think Mike Patton's kind of a fucking douchebag.
No, he
I really only like the first Faith No More album with him on vocals, The Real Thing. That's the only album I like with him on it. He is a very talented fucking vocalist. Yeah, that
is amazing.
You can't take away the fact that man has fucking talent.
Yeah, I mean, I love Angel Dust. That's my favorite Faith No More album. But
I like how he had the whiny voice.
I do. He's got a little bit of that on Angel Dust. But I love
a little
the real
bit.
Voice,
yeah.
I mean, they're both great albums. I love them both. But, yeah. Anyway, Ryan and Eric, you have fucked up my segue. But I'm going to move forward into the segue regardless because the show must go on. Okay. Take your whiskey home.
Hell yeah.
We're done with Lost in Control. Enough. We talked about Lost in Control for a fucking half hour. It's a fucking 3 minutes on. Anyway. Okay. Take your whiskey home. It's great. We're not going to have as much to say about this song because it's not as weird and gonzo as the other one. But it's fucking awesome bluesy hard rock. I think just like Fools, but even more so, you hear a lot of ZZ Top love on this song. Take your whiskey home. Love the guitar work, the vibe. I would sometimes hear this on the radio, on classic rock radio. So, as a deep track, when they would occasionally play a deep track, so I would say this is probably the third most played song from this album But anyway, really? So, I've heard it, at least in Philly, Eric, they would sometimes play this fucking song.
No fucking way.
Yeah, it's a cool place, Philly. I would say this, if this is the difference between a stupid use of grammar would be... A lot of people would put parentheses. They would make, like, take your whiskey and put that in parentheses, and then the song would be just home. And obviously that would be stupid. David Lee Roth is not a stupid person, so he doesn't do that. He makes it just a fucking sentence. Take your whiskey home. Ryan,
right.
Russell, what do you think of take your whiskey home?
It's brilliant. I mean, it's again, how all over the place this album is. I love this is kind of a little change of pace here, and I love the slow to beginning, and then you know breaks into kind of the more rocker at the end. But I mean, Dave's lyrics here, man. I mean, to me, they're kind of you know it's a old school classic blues song, but like his lyrics are just the absolute best on this. Kind of highlight the song for me because other than that, it's a pretty traditional blues song. But these were all the colors and flavors of Van Halen at their prime, and I mean this is the kind of song that gave their albums the diversity and just the you know you go from metal song to blues song to pop song, but I mean this is just straight. Fucking blues, and man, Dave's lyrics are just the absolute best down here. Some goes to women, some goes to Jesus, though I'm absolutely certain both are right. I mean, that's vintage Dave, that's him at his prime. Fucking love it, so cool.
Nice. Eric, what do you think of Take Your Whiskey Home?
Oh my god, I fucking love Take Your Whiskey Home. This is another one, man, like Romeo Delight. This is one of my favorite songs off the fucking album for the longest fucking time. And I love the fact, too, that it's like, you know, I guess that when you're saying you heard a lot on the radio in Philly, this is another one I never heard on the fucking radio. So that's what made it so cool. It was like a deep cut that, you know, only the true Van Halen fans knew. Or like if you introduced this to your friends who are into hard rock, they're like, oh, I never heard this one before, you know? It's a cool song. I love like the acoustic intro and the bluesiness of it. Because when I was like you know in middle school and like my freshman year, I was still into a lot of, like kind of bluesy rock, like dirty, gritty bluesy rock. You know, this was such a cool song with me that resonated with me. Love the way Dave sings it, man. It's just Dave has so much character, man. And I'm sorry, man. Give me a guy like Dave who, yeah, maybe he's not the greatest singer technically, but he has so much character and so much soul in his fucking voice, as opposed to Sammy Hagar. I don't give a fuck if Sammy Hagar can hit all these fucking different notes and octaves and shit. Give me Dave any day, because at the end of the day, man, soul, like having soul in your voice or in your playing or whatever, is going to outlive like a person that can hit all these different notes. You know, that's why, like, I love Deano Era Maiden. That's why my favorite guitar solo of all time is the guitar solo in Simple Man by Lynyrd Skynyrd. It's just stuff that has soul. It has stuff, it's stuff that you can feel. And that's what I love about Take Your Whiskey Home. It's got Dave's, like, it's got soul to it. It's got humor, but it just works, man. It's a cool fucking tune, man. I love it. You know, and David Lee Roth, man, with his whiskey, man, he loves his Jack Daniels, and that's fucking rock and roll, baby, you know?
Right on. All right, and now I'll start off with the next song, because this is something that we've been all talking about, is the underrated diversity of Dave Era Van Halen.
Yeah.
And here's another song we're about to hit. Could this be magic?
Yes.
Question mark used properly. It's this is a song. We never heard them do a song like this before. It's an acoustic song. Very different from the rest of the album. Very different from them. It's like what the Beatles and the Stones and Led Zeppelin would do. You know, it's that level of artistry where they throw this totally different kind of acoustic kind of folky, almost, I would say, ragtime-sounding song.
Exactly.
And you would hear this ragtime side a little bit also on Diver Down. And David Lee Roth actually playing the rhythm acoustic guitar. And Eddie is doing amazing lead acoustic guitar work. This is like a Jimmy Page-level acoustic guitar work. And it also shows you the diversity of Eddie as a player. That he could... It's not like it's not just all like a flash and electricity, you know.
Oh yeah,
like it's real. Like he could do this on an acoustic guitar, and it sounds amazing. The melody, and of course, this is the type of song they could only do with David Lee Roth, you know.
Exact, damn right.
He brings this whole kind of like I would also say very similar to Paul McCartney. Is this kind of music geekdom, this
show tune stuff kind
of. Like he could go that far back. He could go back to the granny songs,
Even though I'm not a big fan of Queen or Freddie Mercury, kind of same thing Freddie Mercury
where they're acknowledging not to, like music prior to rock and roll, you know.
Yeah.
And you know that definitely comes with David Lee Roth. Like, I don't think Eddie goes before, like, the Beach Boys and the Kinks, maybe. That's
exactly.
You know, but David Lee Roth can go back even further, you know? And he has that old school Jewish showman side that comes from his side of the family.
Yeah.
And he knows about that shit. And he knows about music from the 30s and 40s. And he brings that element to the band. And it's all over this, and just in itself, on its own merits, it's just a very, very tuneful song. And this is something that both, I would say, Paul McCartney and Bob Dylan have done, where they've created songs that sound like, I would say, instant standards. Like, you hear the song, and it sounds like it could have been written before they wrote it, if you know what I mean. Like, Could This Be Magic? Sounds like it could have been a legit song from the 30s or 40s, you know, that you would have undercover.
Yeah. Oh, and even Freddie Mercury, too. This song Freddie Mercury would have done as well.
It's a modern 1980 song. Like, they wrote it then. And, you know, it's a beautiful song. It's great. Sequencing, by the way, we haven't talked about this, but the sequencing is amazing on this album. Every song leads right into the song it should lead into. Could This Be Magic is like the perfect little acoustic curveball interlude between Take Your Whiskey Home and the next song, which I'm sure we're gonna have a lot to say about. But it's a perfect, beautiful song, and this is like high level artistry. And as much as I love a lot of metal and punk and thrash and stuff like that, this is the kind of thing they couldn't pull off. Like, that's the thing, like I said, there's a few artists like the Beatles, the Stones, Led Zeppelin. There's a few artists that have that musical dexterity and diversity where they can pull something out like this and throw it in. Like, think about this. This is on the same album that has Loss of Control is a song like Could This Be Magic. That's like the Beatles having Martha, My Dear and Helter Skelter on the same album. You know,
that's a
level of artistry and diversity that you don't see in too many bands. And it's amazing. It's great. It's a great deep track. Now, this I never heard on the radio, but it's catchy as hell. It could have been. Beautiful harmonies, beautiful melodies. It's an instant standard that should be a standard. What do you think, Ryan T. Russell, of Could This Be Magic?
I mean, I couldn't agree with you guys more in every single word that you've said on it. Getting back, I mean, it's so crazy that you actually made a comparison to the White Album. Yeah. But I literally had a back and forth with a guy who was a Big Dave fan, but also a Sammy fan, where he was saying he thought they were more diverse with Sammy than they were with Dave. And I'm blown away by that concept. I'm like, you listen to the Dave albums, the range of songs on every one of these albums is so crazy to me. Like, I think it's like Led Zeppelin level and Beatles level of almost like every song from one to the next is so different. The expanse of where they were drawn from is unbelievable. Everything from Motown to hard rock to metal to, like, that was the beauty of early Van Halen to me. And, like, the people that don't hear that, the people that don't understand that, I mean, listen to a song like this. I mean, even the lyrics, like, I mean, you know, like the lonely ships, that's like 50s, 40s, like really, like way back, like. But, like, Roth had that breadth of kind of, like, influence. He had heard it all. He had heard what was modern at the time, but he had also listened because his uncle had a place in New York City, so he'd heard the weird shit. And, like, he was this just kind of funnel of everything cultural into Eddie's genius, and this song is kind of, like, one of those weird science experiments that was brilliant between the two of them. So cool, so great. Everything that's great with Van Halen, but specifically Dave and Eddie on this one is fucking awesome.
Right on. What do you think, Eric?
I love this song. This is what I love about old school Van Halen, was they did shit like this. This is just fucking fun shit, man. It's like, you know, drinking song. It's just like, this kind of song you put on when you're drinking with your buddies and just having, you know, you're drunk, you're having fun, and you have these songs that are like kind of like sing-along songs almost, and this was something only Dave-era Van Halen could pull off. Sammy wasn't cool enough or, like, had the swagger to pull this shit off. Only Dave could, man, and it's awesome, like, hearing Dave and Eddie on acoustic guitar doing this. I love, like, you know, Dave, again, with his coolness, you know, just like, you know, Edward, right before Eddie does, like, that cool little guitar part. Yeah, it's just so cool, man. There's something about Dave. He's so cool, and he doesn't even have to try. Like, he's just naturally, he oozes charisma. And I love the female vocals on there. I forget what the female singer was that sings on this. Do you guys know what her name was?
Yeah, her name is Nicolette Larson. She also Nicolette sang Larson. On Neil Young. She also sang on Neil Young's Lot of Love. Very attractive woman from her picture.
Oh, and yes, I agree heavily.
and had a very nice voice.
And Edwin, too, this is also, I'm surprised you didn't mention this, because I know you love title tracks that aren't exactly title tracks, because they do say Women and Children First in this
song. Yeah, they do. Yeah. Yeah, that does count. Yeah, this is one of those non-title track tracks. Yeah.
But yeah, I love this song, man. It's fun. It's like, and I love the atmosphere of it. Like, you can hear the rain in the background because it was raining when they recorded this. And I just love the little things like that. This is, again, it's just, you know, things like this and, like, you know, them doing the Happy Trails on Diver Down. You know, the ba-ba-da, shoo-ba-doo-ba, and I'm the One. It's like, things like that were just, they're so cool, and they're so unique, and you really just, not anyone could pull that off and make it sound cool. You know, Van Halen just had, these four guys, they had Lightning in a Bottle, where they did these out of the blue things that just, they had the confidence to do it, and they pulled it off where no one else really could. You got to have that confidence. You got to have that special charisma to pull this off. And I love this song for that. I love how different it is. I love when albums throw something different in there, but it still flows with the album. It still flows with the vibe that they're trying to give off in this album. It's just a fun time drinking song. Like, it's a song you drink a couple beers with your friends, and you sing along with it, and you have fun with it. It's a cool fucking song.
It's funny you say it's a drinking song. For some reason, I've always tied this song to the scene in Jaws where
yeah.
they're...
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, hell yeah.
Thing that Ralph plays it in his video.
Yeah, show me the way to go home.
Yeah. It's a very similar type of, like, vibe to that song to me.
It really is. And also, too, the other thing I wanted to point out, I forgot to point it out, was, and it says similarities to the song on Diver Down, Big Bad Bill, is, I don't know if you guys, like, watch a lot of Pixar movies. You know, like, Pixar movies always had those little shorts at the beginning, and they had, like, that very, like, kooky kind of sounding music. It sounds like something that could be in a Pixar movie, like, just the music. Like, Big Bang Bill in this song, like, if you just took the words and lyrics out of it, and you just had the instrumentals, it sounds like something that'd be, like, in one of those Pixar shorts, or, like, a Pixar movie, like, title sequence.
But in general, it's a little Disney-esque, I mean, even...
It really is, magic.
Yeah, I could definitely...
I love that side of Van Halen. I mean, the people that complain about, like, the covers on Diver Down, like, if you don't feel those songs, if you don't get those songs from a Van Halen, like, point of view, then I don't think you really get Van Halen.
Well, and some people, I've heard people, and I don't want to go off on too much of a digression, but I've heard, like, some people sometimes, like, say, oh, I like the Beatles, but I don't like Paul McCartney stuff.
Oh, that's just ridiculous.
Well, I've heard, you don't hear that so much anymore, maybe a few people, but I would hear that actually as a teenager, because there was definitely a little more of a cool associate of John Lennon. And, of course, I love John Lennon as well. But to me, it was just like, well, you really can't love the Beatles and not love both of them, in my opinion.
I agree, because each brought their own style to it.
Yeah, I mean, if you say you love the Beatles, but you only love the John stuff and you hate the Paul stuff, well, then you only love half the Beatles. You know,
yeah.
You're not loving the full thing. And if you listen to the White Album and you like only like the hard rocking songs and you don't like the pop stuff or the folk stuff, I know you're not getting the full spectrum of what they're about.
And man, that's what makes the Beatles so great, is because it is really, Grant, you got George, who I really do like George.
I do, I do too.
And Ringo too, but yeah. it's mainly John and Paul. And John, I like the fact, Paul, that they bring two different elements to the fucking band. It just makes it more interesting. And it's the reason why I like, Rainbow so much, because every album was fucking different. Every album had different members, and so each one had its own unique style. They never made the same album twice. I think that's what makes music interesting, when you can change, but it's not like really selling out change. It's just changing where, okay, we did this album, we're not going to do that same thing because we already did it before. We're going to do something new, but still going to kick ass, you know?
Well, and it's interesting because to segue into the next and last song, I want to talk, before we talk about the last song, I want to talk about the hidden track, because it connects to what you were talking about. The hidden track is entitled Growth, which essentially is just this coda, this guitar hook, which originally Eddie was planning, like, that was going to be the opening of Fair Warning.
Yes.
Obviously, he decided not to do that, you know, because ironically, the growth was so quick, and he kept moving that by the time he was getting to Fair Warning, he had already grown past that idea. Like, you know.
Well, and also, too, he had really bad... I know when they were recording Fair Warning, he had really bad writer's block, and he was kind of... Yeah, that's kind of why that's kind of an angry-sounding album, almost, because he was so frustrated, because he really was, like, struggling to come up with ideas.
Oh, no, that's bullshit. I'm sorry, I'm taking
it. Well, I don't know, there was a little bit of frustration. I mean, burnout.
No, Eddie's, actually, that's almost like a solo Eddie Van Halen album, in my opinion. Like, he obviously had some kind of mad, and I'm not saying there's not anger there, there's anger there, but he was obviously in a very creative place. I mean, listen to all those tracks. He's just knocking out stuff. From what I heard, at least from what I read, Ryan could correct me if not, Eddie recorded a lot of those Fair Warning songs in this, like, mad burst. And then Dave, when he was handed this, it was like the first time Dave was handed something. He did step up to the table eventually, because Dave is a genius. But he was just like, what's this shit? This is a little different. It's a little darker. And he wasn't as keen on it as much. And he thought they were going kind of in a different direction. But I don't think it was writer's block. I just think Eddie was just like, he was in some other place in a darker direction. And he was like, whatever he was thinking when he was wrapping up this album of Growth, he... maybe, you know, drug related, who knows, but he was suddenly like, fuck that shit, let's do this shit instead. And you hear on Mean Streets and Dirty Movies and Sinner Swing, I mean, I don't know, I mean, to me, that's peak fucking Brown sound. And Eddie's he's having some kind of coked up mad genius moment, Fair Warning, and David Lee Roth works with it and makes it a Van Halen album. But I don't know. That's my feeling. Before we get to the last track, do you want to weigh in on that, Ryan?
No, I mean I totally agree with what you're saying. But again, I go back to I think you could kind of feel what was brewing for Fair Warning with this album. These albums kind of flow into each other, and they're very similar set up. You know, it's a very tight 9 song, and they're both less than, I think, like 35, 36 minutes total. I think this was a little more of I think it's a little more odd and a little more chaotic than Fair Warning is. I do think Fair Warning has a little bit more of a commercial appeal and a little bit more of a catchiness appeal overall.
Mm. But I think it's also, I think it's a little because it's all about how you enter an album. Like, I think why me and Eric kind of seem to be on the same page in regards to thinking Fair Warning is darker. And you seem to be on the page that this album's more experimental. I think to a degree, both albums are experimental. I think why we think Fair Warning is a little darker, maybe I think it's how you're going into it. In a lot of ways, they're kind of the reverse. Whereas Fair Warning seems to put its poppiest songs in the middle, like at the center of the album. Think of the last two tracks on the first side, the first couple tracks on the second side. Whereas this album, and I'm just realizing this in real time, it's interesting, kind of does the opposite. It puts all the weirdness right in the fucking center, in the dead center.
I agree.
I think you're drawn to that center, Ryan.
The accessible stuff is on the edges.
Yeah, the edges. So I guess that's, you're focusing kind of on the center, and Eric and I are kind of focusing on the bookends of Fair Warning, which is darker and weirder, especially when you look at like how they end. Like, even though we're about to go into a very progressive, perhaps one of the most progressive Van Halen tracks, it's a very uplifting, beautiful song. So this is a good segue into In a Simple Rhyme. Whereas, think about how Fair Warning ends. You know, 1 foot out the door, you know, it's a dark, minimalistic kind of song. It's like, it's not an optimistic song. It's a dark song. And it's almost kind of like a half-written song. I mean, if there was any writer's block, it might have been for that one, because it's not entirely finished, but it's totally awesome sounding, and it's dark, and it's leading you, you don't know where it's leading you, you know, exactly. Where it, Whereas in a simple rhyme is this like beautiful, almost orchestrated sounding song that's like a perfect sum up for kind of them in the 70s, like in a way. Like this could be the last Van Halen song at that time before they go into this other area. It's one of the most beautiful songs ever written, I think. So I'm just going to go right into it. In a Simple Rhyme is my second favorite song on the album after Romeo Delight. It's one of my favorite Van Halen songs. I consider it a hymn, a musical hymn, not to be pretentious, but I really feel that there's something religious about the song. It's different from anything else they've ever done, before or after. There's a substance to it. There's a power to it. It's very soulful and musing. The guitar, from the music, from the harmonies, beautiful backup harmonies, Dave's lyrics, singing. This is another thing. People that I don't think that Dave's given enough credit also as a singer. I think he could be a very soulful singer, and he's very soulful in this song. It's kind of like you mentioned Paul Di'Anno. You know, Eric, which I know we're all fans of. Paul Di'Anno, for example, like, I would say, like, Bruce Dickinson could hit maybe certain notes that he couldn't hit, but could Bruce Dickinson sing something like Prodigal Son, you know, and give you a feeling? Like Paul Di'Anno sang Prodigal Son, and there's a soul to it. There's a feeling to it that I don't think, and I like Bruce Dickinson, but I don't think he could have pulled that off. I don't think he could pull off that same feeling. Likewise, in a Simple Rhyme, I don't think Sammy could have pulled off, you know, even though he was like, ooh, the love song guy and sang a lot about it. You know, I don't think he could have sang a song like this with the same feeling. It's like Dave sang with songs like Secrets, you know, and there's just a feeling to it. We start off this episode, we talking about how Dave was a crazy egotist that wasn't a people's person. That's true to a degree. But I will say this, and this is kind of a complicated thing I'm trying to express here. But what I'm saying is, you could be like not of. Okay, there's a line from the movie Gladiator where one of the senators says, "You could be for the people and not be of the people." Which I always thought was a good line. And that's kind of like Dave in a way, you know? Like, Dave's not of the people, but he is for the people. And it's like, in a Simple Rhyme, it's like, yeah, he's not the guy you could sit and have a beer with, but he will sing you a song that you will connect with at 3 a.m., you know, a dark night of the soul, and he will make you feel better. You know, that's his fucking job. And so he might not be of the human race, but he gets the human race, and he will fucking sing you a beautiful fucking song that makes you feel a little bit better about your life, you know? Stevie Nicks said something very beautiful once that I didn't bring up in that last episode, where she made the decision to not be a mother herself. You know, she's an offbeat, weird woman, kind of like Dave's a weird person.
And kind of like Doro. Doro's the same way.
Yeah, she's this like weird diva living up in the Hollywood Hills, and you know, she never was able to like sustain a marriage and have children herself. But Stevie said this beautiful thing. She said, "Yeah, I chose not to be a mother, but I decided my place in the world would be to sing songs that would make mothers feel better." Which I thought was a really beautiful statement. And
it is,
And it showed a certain awareness. Like, she was kind of recognizing, like, yeah, I'm a weird, offbeat, witchy woman up in the hills. And, you know, I'm not going to do that normcore mother stuff. But she wasn't looking down at it either. She was like, I have empathy for these women. And that's my role. That's what I'm going to do. Likewise, I can't speak for Dave now, crazy, you know, and old and all that. But I can tell you, in 1980... even then, Dave was not one of us. He was an offbeat, weird guy. But he understood how we felt. He understood how we felt about women and life and aspiration and all these things. And he could give us a song that was a simple rhyme, but there's nothing simple about it. You know, it's poetry. It's beautiful. It's one of the great statements. And as this is a band triumph, and it's also one of the songs that I think me and Ryan were alluding to earlier, where I have suspicions about Michael Anthony playing bass on this song. This is a very aggressive bass line on this. This is like fucking Rush level, you know, like bass playing. So
it
I don't know.
It is Geddy Lee-ish.
It's very Geddy Lee-ish. I have my doubts, yeah. But regardless.
This shit's too advanced for Michael.
It's very advanced. It's a very advanced song. It's a great triumph. Amazing drumming from Alex. It's this driving, very unique song. I mean, you just live in it. It also makes me, there was always a Beach Boys influence in a lot of the Van Halen stuff. And, you know, they were coming up from that era. And they grew up, you know, they're from the same, neighborhood and area where the Beach Boys grew up. So obviously they felt a kinship with that. And not just in the obvious sense in the harmonies, like you could hear the Beach Boys style harmonies, but also the production, the guitar sounds. In a lot of ways, I feel like Eddie and Alex are doing what like kind of Ryan Wilson and the Wrecking Crew is doing on Pet Sounds. There's a similar quality to Pet Sounds on this song in its own kind of comprised way. It's like a little pocket symphony with these instruments. And it's amazing. It's beautiful. But as much as I can say about all that, and I still feel like Dave really is the person that really brings it over the edge with his beautiful lyrics, his beautiful delivery. It's one of my favorite Van Halen songs of all time. I remember Ralph Vieira said this was the song that was playing on the radio when he heard Eddie Van Halen had passed away, and he pulled over his car and had to cry. And I could understand that, especially with Eddie's death. But, yeah, I feel that way, like, almost every time I hear the song. It always brings me almost a little close to tears.
It does.
It's one of the most beautiful songs ever written. And, yeah, I mean, imagine people that don't listen, that don't do the deep dive of, like, Dave Eyre Van Halen albums. Like, you're not hearing in a simple rhyme. Like, to me, that'd be, like, I don't know, saying, like, how could you judge, like, Led Zeppelin without listening to, like, you know, 10 Years Gone, you know?
Oh,
or The
Rain.
You know, it's like that. It's like you haven't really heard Van Halen until you've heard a song like this. Yeah. So anyway, so that's everything I have to say about In a Simple Rhyme. Let's go to Eric first, and then we'll wrap up with Ryan. What do you got to say about this?
Oh, my God, man. I love this song, man. And, I don't know if I touched upon it in our last episode when we did like a Van Hagar review, but one thing I love about Van Halen with the six pack was I love the way they end their albums, and every album ended differently, but it always worked. You know, like the first Van Halen album, they ended with probably one of their heaviest fucking songs with On Fire. Van Halen 2 ended with like a real fun party time song with Beautiful Girls. Diver Down, they end with Happy Trails, which is really unique, you know, something very, very Dave-esque. You know, and with this album, I mean, they ended with In a Simple Rhyme, which is like a really cool, really badass love song, you know, a hard rock love song. Yeah, not a power ballad or a pre-power ballad, I'd say, but just a hard rockin' love song. And I love this tune, man. It's real beautiful. I love the way it starts off, and I totally get it. Where, like Ralph said, this is the song that he heard on the day Eddie died that brought him to tears, man. Because even just hearing you talking about it right now, when it's like I almost myself kind of teared up a little bit because I hear it in my head now, and it's fucking beautiful, man. Well, one thing I used to do back in the day. You know, back in the days where YouTube became really big and, you know, we had iTunes and streaming and all this shit, one thing I used to love to do is I'd hop on the computer. I'd ask my stepdad, like, hey, can I use the computer? And my thing I used to love to do was I'd go on, like, Amazon.com and you could listen to, like, 30-second samples of songs. And that's what I do. I listen to, like, 30-second samples of songs that either I liked or 30-second samples of songs, like, where I want to get this album, but I'm still saving up money for it, or I'm waiting till my birthday or Christmas to ask to get it, you know, for that holiday. And I used to love looking at the reviews, and this is kind of where I think I wanted to get into podcasting and do, like, music reviews, was the fact that one of my favorite things was I loved to look at albums that I loved, or albums I hadn't heard yet, and I love to look at the reviews. Like, people would do, like, track-by-track reviews on their Amazon review. And it was always fun seeing what people had to say about certain songs, whether they agreed with my opinions or disagreed with my opinions. It was always fun. And I remember one person said, you know, talked about In a Simple Rhyme and said, oh, this is the, people say Sweet Child of Mine is like one of the best hard rock, like, love songs, but no way. I think it's In a Simple Rhyme, and I kind of agree with them, man. And I guess you could say Sweet Child of Mine has a burnout factor for me, but, man, something about In a Simple Rhyme, it's just, it's so underrated. No one talks about this song, you know, except for us.
It's crazy.
It is.
It's crazy, you know, that this is, like, on the radio. Like, I feel like this should be a classic rock staple, too.
It blows my mind because it is. It's like a Sweet Child of Mine, but, like, you know, it came out way before. Because it's not like a power ballad or like a pre-power ballad, like a Beth or something. It's like, it's just a hard rocking song, but it's like, you listen to the lyrics, it's like a love song. And it's just so fucking beautiful. And lyrically, it's so beautiful, but it's so fun. It's not like a cheesy ballad, you know. Sammy Hagar wrote all these fucking love songs and ballads when he was in Van Halen. But it didn't have the soul that this song does. You know, and Dave had soul to his voice. Sammy was very generic, very sterile, by the book, you know, it's just Dave had a soul to his voice. It just sounded natural. It sounded real and relatable. You know, that's why, you know, when I hear Why Can't This Be Love, I think it's just some gay-ass fucking pop song. When I hear this shit, it's like, wow, this shit really, like, hits me in the heart. It really hits me in the soul because I feel everything that Dave says, and then the music that, you know, Eddie and Alex and even Michael Anthony just sitting on his ass eating Doritos and smoking pot. You know, it's just like the music just matches everything that Dave's saying. It just, you feel it in your heart and you feel it in your soul, and it's a beautiful fucking song. And and it makes me think of my beautiful wife, who I love to death, who, you know, God bless her, she's waiting to talk to me, but she's like, hey, do your podcast, have fun with your friends talking about Van Halen. I know how much this means to you, so fuck yeah. Shout out to my wife, you know, Mary. She's fucking awesome. So I love this goddamn song. It's beautiful.
Right on. I just want to say one thing. Do you think there was a moment in 1980, they're about to play a show live, Eddie walks up to Michael Anthony and goes, hey, we're going to play In a Simple Rhyme tonight. And then Michael Anthony turns white as a ghost.
He's like, oh, shit, I was smoking pot.
And then Eddie goes, nah, I'm just fucking with you. Don't worry, we're not playing.
Yeah. And this is a song. It was a song, too, from the club days, too. And I love that, too. You know, people complain about that. Like, oh, they're always reusing songs from the club days. It's like, yeah, well, they wrote a lot of great songs in the club days that you can't fit on one album. So they kind of, like, spread them out. And that's, I think that's awesome.
That's right. The first, like, three Doors albums were all songs they played in the
club. And people don't understand, too. It's like back in the day, it was 10 songs to an album under 30, you know, under 30-something minutes.
Yeah. And people were knocking out albums, like, every year. It's not now. Yeah. They sit on their dicks for 5 years between albums. So, yeah.
Exactly. And that's the genius of it. Shuffle, you know, it gave them time to improve the song, you know.
Alright, Ryan T. Russell, this is your big moment here to fucking send us home after all this fucking stuff that we've been talking about. Let's see what you've got to say about In a Simple Rhyme.
I mean, just an unbelievable way to finish an album. I mean, realize that this is literally one of the oldest Van Halen songs on record. There is a demo of this song from 1974.
That, in a weird way, might explain a touch of the prog quality to it when you think about it.
Well, I mean, maybe. It's
because they
cool song, and I go back to our rankings when we did that top 20. This was my number 4 Van Halen song of all time. That's how much I love this fucking song. This song is just beautiful. The harmonies are every Van Halen song ever. It's the best harmonies. I mean, there's some pretty good shit on Diver Down. This is it for me for like that, like just, you know, trademark Van Halen harmonies.
Yeah.
This is the peak. This is, you know, the melody of this song. Oh my God. I mean, this is what, you know, songwriters, when you are a lyricist like Roth was, where it's mostly, you know, you're not writing a lot of the music. He wrote little bits of music here and there, but he was primarily the lyric writer and the melody writer.
And a great one at that.
Oh, one of the all-time best. I mean, his lyrics, we go into the whole, you know, shithouse poet and all that shit. It's just brilliant and different and unique and clever and so much. It's what made him what he was. DLR is a all-time unique figure. But the melodies, appreciated thing for Dave. I mean, God damn, the melodies he sang in these songs, and this is a perfect example of it. This is just like cotton candy, catchy, almost power poppy type writing. You know, the other stuff there's not a ton in the Van Halen catalog that I could compare to it, but it just shows the diversity of how good that original Van Halen was, that they could do stuff that was just flat out metal, and they could do stuff that was blues, old school bluesy, and they could do the 40s, 50s weird shit. But I mean, like the diversity of this stuff and in a simple rhyme, again, it's chaotic. It's not written to a set template. It's very different, but again, they wrote this a couple years before Michael Anthony was even in the band. So, I mean, like, it just shows you, like, the weirdness of that dynamic between Eddie and Dave. It was there long before they even realized what they were going to be together. And yeah. This song is as good an example as any of it, where you were seeing that kind of, you know, coming together of this kind of, you know, Eddie was more the technical guitarist, you know, the virtuoso with his back to the crowd, whereas Dave was the, you know, the face of the crowd and the, you know, you have to mix the two. One on its own isn't going to cut it. You know, we got to do something a little catchier, a little more melodic, and the two, you know, we talked about it over and over again. It's one of those rare, unbelievable combos. You know, Mick and Keith, you know, Lennon McCartney, they are up there. You know, Plant Page. Anybody that denies that DLR Eddie is not on the same level with those others, I'll fight them until the end of the day, because I honestly believe DLR Eddie or Mount Rushmore.
Damn right.
The two best.
Right on.
They're both brilliant on their own, sure. But without each other, they were never the same.
Exact. I fucking agree wholeheartedly.
Hey, man. Ryan. Yeah. But what are you saying there? What are you saying there?
What, me?
No, the other fucking Eric.
Oh. Well, no, Yeah, I mean, I've said for a long time, I think you had the Beatles in the 60s, you had Led Zeppelin in the 70s, and then, you know, unfortunately Sammy Hagar kind of fucked it up, but you had Van Halen in the 80s, you had these three bands that they were a four-piece for each member, even though we kind of goof on Michael Anthony. You know, you have four members that really contributed so much to the band and each had their own unique purpose, where they really redefined a generation. You know, the Beatles were the band of the 60s and redefined music for the 60s. Led Zeppelin did the same for the 70s. And then Van Halen did the same thing for the 80s. Now, you know, unfortunately, kind of their legacy was kind of, you know, tainted with Sammy Hagar, because he kind of fucked it all up and made them a generic fucking, you know, Walmart brand lover boy. I honestly think, man, if 1984 happened and then they just broke up and just didn't even continue after that and just did solo projects, I mean, I really think Van Halen would have been like, oh, they're the band that redefined the music in the 80s, much like Led Zeppelin and the Beatles. And they're very important, man. I do agree with Ryan that, you know, Dave and Eddie were that guitar singer combo, much like Page and Plant, much like, you know, Lennon McCartney, you know, as bass player and guitarist who were both singers. They're up there with those guys. You know, they're very important to music and they did something different. They redefined an era of music and really ushered in a new era, you know, for the 80s. You know, it's you can't deny Van Halen being such an important band for the fucking 80s and for hard rock.
Hey, man. Hey, but Ryan did not weigh in. Michael Anthony, despite what that engineer said, do you think he's playing bass on In a Simple Rhyme?
No, I think all those crazy bass runs are all Eddie.
Yeah, and Eric, what do you think?
I think Michael Anthony played some bass. I do agree that definitely there's some stuff where I think Eddie definitely played bass because there was just some bass playing where I think is really, really advanced and I think just way beyond Michael Anthony. But I do feel like Michael Anthony is a very important part of Van Halen. And whether what I, you know, regardless of what I think of him now, that I think he's Sammy Hagar's little bitch boy, he was at one point a very important part of this band. Yeah, he may be the weakest link, but he still contributed a very important part of the band. You know, he had those signature background vocals, which are very important to their sound. Those background vocals are key, and him and Eddie really created that sound. So, I mean, he's a very important part of the band. I know we kind of shit on him and goof on him a lot, but he's an easy target, and, it's, you know, that's just how we are. But he's very important to it, too. He's the weakest link of the band, but he's still very important. So, you know, but I do think that it's kind of half and half. He played some bass on some of these songs, or some songs where I'm like, yeah, I believe Eddie probably played on some of this.
Yeah, they could have even, sometimes on the same song, they could have punched him in. You know, Eddie punched a little bass fill here and there. And
yeah, like basically, that. Like, Eddie wrote the bass part and just basically was telling Michael what to play, you know?
Yeah, it's possible. Who knows? Who knows? Like I said, this song, Romeo Delight, I'm a little suspicious about. I think, Michael probably played on all the others, for sure. That's my thinking. So anyway, that's it. We did the fucking album.
Fucking A, man.
I'm thinking this is a two-parter. I think the first part has Johnny. Second part doesn't have John. Has Johnny in spirit. That's what I'm thinking.
That might be a perfect cut. Johnny.
Well, I can tell you because it's looking like it's encroaching on 4 hours. So it'd be a clean kind of two-hour episode. So
who knows? Yeah.
I'm thinking Johnny Vogan. He's in the cut. Sexy man in the cut.
So he is a sexy man. Right. No homo. He is a sexy man.
Let me tell you, right now as we speak.
And Watkins.
Yeah. Yeah. A shout out to Mick Watkins who could not be here. He had a family obligation. He did send me a message, though. He apologized. We'll have him back on again for something else.
I want to bring him on for I want to do a Blue Oyster Cult album. I'll talk about this after we finish recording.
Yeah, maybe the new album when it comes out. We'll talk about that. But yeah, definitely. But hey, it wasn't like you, me, and Ryan couldn't talk a lot about Van Halen.
I wasn't concerned because I know Ruben also was supposed to be on. He must have forgot or something. I didn't hear back from him. But I knew it was like it's classic Van Halen. There's no way we're not going to be able to kill like a couple hours talking about this band.
Yeah, I knew it was going right. You triple book so that even when whoever's left around, you'll still have more than enough guests to talk. Right now as we speak, I'm telling you, Johnny Vogan has just finished making love to his lady.
Yeah, he busted massive nuts.
He busted a nut. And right now, he's staring up at the ceiling thinking, I wish I finished that episode with the guys.
Right now, he's like... He's like that kid in Days Confused. He's like rolling a joint and putting his headphones on while this bitch is passed out because, you know, she just got made love to by Johnny fucking Vogan. Yeah. You know, he's listening to Van Halen, Women, Children First, like, yeah.
Yeah. I should have finished that episode with the guys. Oh well, whatever. I'll listen to it in a few months.
Hey, at least he got laid.
Hey, that's what's awesome. We did an episode of Women and Children First where literally one of the co-hosts got laid in the middle of it.
Mid-episode.
But that's the thing. That's, as far as we know, Ryan did with his wife too, but he's a classy guy, so he doesn't kiss himself.
Yeah. Hell yeah, man.
I'm keeping any details about me and the wife off of any podcasts.
There you go. The silence is a little wink-wink with a wink. Anyway, so that's the show. It's awesome. A lot of people got laid, or at least one. But regardless,
hey, we're getting laid.
That's one more than most podcasts. How many podcasts have people getting laid in the middle of them?
Exactly.
Not many. It's fucking rock and roll. It's the Rock Overview podcast. Ryan, do you have anything to recommend before we fucking drop the mic here?
Oh, wow. You popped this on me. I don't know where to go with this.
Okay, Eric, do you have anything to recommend?
I mean, here's my recommendation, man. Go play some fucking Van Halen, and I'm talking real Van Halen, whether it's this album or any album in the six-pack. Have a couple drinks, whether you're a beer drinker, wine drinker, you like cocktails, and go find yourself a hot chick. And you know, if there's that hot chick that you're like, you know, oh, maybe should I ask her out or something? If you're one of the, you know, if you're someone that's single, go ask that bitch out. So let's go hang out, listen to some Van Halen, have a couple drinks. You're going to get fucking laid because you're listening to Van Halen, baby. Fucking Van Halen. Drink, listen to Van Halen, and get laid. That's my fucking recommendation. Have a good time.
I will tell you, the hardest, but hold on, Ryan. We're going to save you for the end now. You missed your chance. But we'll come back to you. You're going to be at the end. So think about that recommendation. This is your chance to think about it. But think about that approach, Eric. If you hit on a woman that way, there's a chance you might scare her off. However, I will say this. If she's down for it, if she's like, yeah, let's go and listen to some Van Halen, you automatically, if you don't have sex with that woman, it's on you.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
It's pretty much, it's like, it's your pussy to lose at that point.
Yeah. Well, and either way, too, man, even if the girl you're talking to doesn't want to hook up with you, go hang out with your friends, listen to Van Halen.
Well, yeah, you weren't going to get laid anyway.
Yeah, the right woman, if you're drinking, listen to Van Halen, and hang out with your friends, having a good time, being who you are, the right woman's going to come to you.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Just fucking have fun.
It's a perfect place to say, be cool. You know, that's the thing. You know, be yourself. Be cool. Eventually, you'll get laid with the right woman. That's what's matter. That's what matters.
That's all that matters, man.
Okay, Ryan. Wait, no, hold off. We're not giving it to Ryan quite yet. I want to give my recommendation. Okay, everything that Eric says, I likewise recommend. Specifically, unlike David Lee Roth, though, crazy old dementia David Lee Roth, Johnny Vogan said he walked it back. I don't know. I haven't, you know, been up on the news recently. But he insulted a different kind of truth. And all I can say is Dave is wrong to insult it. I think even Johnny would admit that if he could admit to Dave being wrong in any way. But anyway, it's a great album. And to me, it shares DNA with this album. It was a very awesome experimental album. And if for any reason you feel like it should not be included with the six pack, just because you didn't like fucking finger bang some girl like in the 80s to it. Well, you know, it's not all about nostalgia, motherfucker. Do you love Van Halen because they're awesome, or do you love them because you fucking bopped to them when you were a teenager? Two fucking scenarios. Two fucking different scenarios. If you embrace them because they're just fucking awesome and their music stands the test of time, then do not deny the fucking reunion album they did with David Lee Roth and get a different kind of truth. It's not a six-pack. It's a fucking seven-pack, right?
Bitch, he's like pounding the fucking table.
I feel strongly about this. It's a seven-pack. In fact, I personally prefer to 1984 and Diver Down. That's
shit.
Yeah, it's my fifth favorite Van Halen album. So, fucking, you know, recognize, get that fucking album. It's classic Van Halen. Just because there was some fucking Van Hagar Gary Cherone shit in the middle. Just fucking pretend that didn't happen. It was just a dream. It's fucking, you know, fucking Bobby fucking in the shower. Dallas, the older fans, Mark Daly will get that. You know, it's fucking, you're waking up. It's a fucking different kind of truth. It was a perfect way for Van Halen to end. Get that fucking album. Fucking, it's awesome. And Ryan, T. Russell, what is your recommendation?
Well, let me just, like, follow up saying a different kind of truth fucking rules. Honey Baby Sweetie Dow.
Oh, my God, great song.
Frosty, Out of Space, You and Your Blues. You and Your Blues is some of my favorite Dave lyrics ever.
I even love Tattoo, which a lot of people don't like. I love that song. It's fun.
That's groovy. That's groovy.
I mean, oh, it's the whole fucking album is brilliant. And I actually have a shitty bootleg copy on vinyl thanks to Johnny Vogan. He hooked me up. And, you know, listen, I'm not spending $350 to get the original pressing. I wish I had it, but I don't. But at least I have a version on vinyl. But my, whatever you want to call it, recommendation, pick of the week, whatever, I've been on a huge Cars.
The recommendation. We're not biting that much. It's not a pick of the week. It's a recommendation.
The radical recommendation.
Radical recommendation.
I've been listening to a ton of Cars lately. I've been on a Cars kick, so I'm just
going Cars
debut, which 78, just like Van Halen's debut.
Yeah.
So far ahead of its time. Such a... just like almost like the Boston debut where like every song is a hit.
Yeah.
But even like the deep tracks, like one of my favorite songs on that album, All Mixed Up, which was not, you know, a popular single or whatever. So melodic, so cool.
Love that album.
And you guys did a great, I loved your review of Candio.
Mm-hmm. Dude, much like the Boston debut, that's one of those albums where I hear every song on the fucking radio or at the grocery store. I never get sick of it. I never get tired of it or burnt out.
I think that
debut
and the Boston debut, they're both similar, where like every song is a radio hit and it just never sounds old. It's just timeless.
Exactly.
And
I feel the same way.
And they both have... and I think they both have really strong second albums that get unfairly overshadowed.
Agreed. Heavily.
In both cases. Candio and Don't Look Back are both great albums, in my opinion. But I understand why they're overshadowed, but I don't agree with it. Just because I understand something doesn't mean I agree with it.
Cars, early Cars, it's as good as it gets.
Really fucking good.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I agree. It was more of a, like... you know, so the third album I really love too. It's a little bit more of a grower, but that's great. But I think even Heartbeat City, you know, it's poppy, but it's not as strong as the first three in my opinion. But it's still a really good album, and Shake It Up's a lot of fun. But the first two, to me, it's about the first two are
those
perfect albums.
Perfection. I mean, like start to finish,
it's
just perfection.
Yeah, totally agree. And something, I don't know what it was, something about the water. I will say this, I think 1980 is the greatest year of music, but 1978 is a fucking run for that.
Oh, 78's fucking great. Even for 78 through 79, too, is great for movies as well.
Right, oh, so yeah, well, the whole period.
Stop, I gotta go for it, all right? You ready for this?
Yeah.
And you can edit this out, but while you guys were talking about, like, 80 versus 78... man, 78 could make a really good fucking case for the greatest. You ready? I'm just going to go through like my little best of 78. So starting out with my favorite AC/DC album, and I'm going in alphabetical order, Powerage, number one.
Yeah.
Ace Frehley's solo album with Kiss, number two.
Paul Stanley's solo album.
All right, yeah. Throw that in there, too. I don't know if you guys like him, but Billy Joel, 52nd Street, love that album. Sabbath,
Never
Say Die, Blondie, Parallel Lines, Dylan, Street Legal, Boston, Don't Look Back, Cars, The Cars, Cheap Trick, Heaven Tonight,
Though it's like not like a studio album, Kiss Double Platinum was 78, and I mean that's a great compilation, because I mean that was an album that got a lot of people into Kiss and a lot of people's first Kiss album.
How about back to Judas Priest, Hellbent for Leather, and Stained Glass same year?
I thought Hellbent for Leather was 79.
It's 79. Unless they had an
Stained Glass, Stained Glass though, Stained fucking badass.
But you got
album.
Stained Glass. That's my that's my favorite Judas Priest studio.
I love that
album.
Fucking album.
And you got you have Devo's first album, which is great. I love that. And there's a lot of 78.
Great movies too. I mean, you had the first Halloween. You know, and I love John Carpenter, and that's probably that's my favorite horror movie of all time.
The Who, in 78.
Great fucking era, man.
70s, early 80s, man. To me, that's my power, Ellie.
It's probably mine too. I love the late 70s into the 80s, and
same
it's
era,
a great period.
Great era.
It's great era. We love it. We're all about that era. You are too. If you're listening to this, if you're listening to two episodes back to back about one.
Yeah.
Very short Van Halen album.
For real. I feel like the episodes
we
do about our shortest albums are always the longest.
Yeah, we get loose. We're like, hey, this isn't going to be too long. And then we just make it really fucking long.
We overcompensate. Yeah.
We think we got
way.
All the time in the world. Yeah, it's fun. One of our bigger numbers is the EP one. Yeah. Look at that.
But hey, I gotta say, man, if you're still listening to this episode at this point, man, you fucking rule. And please, man, if you're listening to this episode still, leave us a fucking review and join the Facebook page, man. Have some fun on the Facebook page. Post some stuff you like.
I'm doing a test right now. We're gonna wrap up with this. It's a test.
All right, go.
Anyone is involved? The only person who's excluded from this is Mark Daly, because I know Mark
Daly.
Yeah,
fuck you, Mark Daly. You'll post some stupid shit. God, I love you. You'll post some stupid shit.
Eric said that. I did not say that, Mark Daly. That's not what I'm saying. We all have been drinking, all right. But what I'm just saying is, I know Mark's listening at this point, so there's no challenge there. So it wouldn't be fair. It wouldn't be fair to the non-Mark Daly people that aren't as devoted as Mark Daly is. That's all I'm saying, just for the record. Okay, so fucking Mark Daly is not counted here. All right, everyone else is counted, though. What I'm saying is I'm going to say, all right, a color, a number, and an album. If you, on the Facebook group page, say it after listening to this album, and you're the first person, you will be our next guest. All right?
Ow!
All right.
Yeah.
All right, so there you go. The caller I'm saying now, at the end of this two-part Epic Van Halen review, is the color blue. All right? I'm saying blue. Like blue balls. All right? The number is, hold on, 69. For obvious reasons. The opposite of blue balls. And the album is, this is where I'm going to throw you a curveball. All right.
Oh, fuck.
The album is, all right, Weird Al Yankovic in 3D.
Oh,
all right.
Son of a bitch. Hell yeah.
You didn't see that coming, did you?
So
if someone posts in the Facebook group, the first person to post blue 69 Weird Al Yankovic in 3D, you will be our next co-host, and you get
to prove that they are a diehard.
Because you will prove you are a fucking diehard, and you actually listened to this whole fucking episode, this two-part episode. All right, so that's it. We're out. We're drunk. I'm gonna crash. I don't know about you guys.
Same here, man. I'm gonna crash.
Fuck yeah.
I know Johnny Vogan is fucking spent as a motherfucker and passed out at this point. God bless him. He's sleepy. He's a sleepy man. Alright. Ryan, you're the best. Thank you, as always.
Oh, yeah.
And we're fucking out like trout.
Out.
Always a
pleasure. Later, guys.
Yeah. Eddie, stay on real quick, because I got to talk to you about a couple things.
All right, let me just stop. I'm just going to stop the recording now, because God damn it, we've been recording this show for too long.
Oh, my fucking God, yeah.
All right, later, guys.
I'll see you.
See you guys.
Later. Peace out.
Peace.
All right, yep. And